Father in my name, he may give it to you. These things I command you so that you will love one another. You know, we're doing this series on servanthood not because we want to get more people involved and we're struggling for workers, although that's part of it. Really, we're doing this series because we believe that service is important to our Christian walk, to our walk with God. It's an important part of our life that we know what it understands to act and serve. But in the second week, what I really want to talk about is not having a servant's heart at all, even though that's the name of the series. I want to talk moving beyond the heart of a servant. I want to talk about replacing the heart of a servant with the heart of a friend. See, Jesus said this. He said, "No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. I've called you friends, for all I've heard from my Father, I've made known to you." See, in this one sentence, Jesus changes his entire relationship with disciples. He changes the way that they see their relationship with him. He takes them beyond servants, and he calls them friends. See, what happened here was beyond their wildest dreams. They were called friends by the Messiah. To be called this was a tremendous honor. Perhaps something that we don't fully understand and appreciate today, how much of an honor that actually is. First of all, Jesus says, "I no longer call you servants." That means up until this point, he did call them servants. Because he said, "I no longer." So right up until this point, Jesus had called them servants. And here he changes their status. And it's a big change. You know, the word used for servant here isn't just employee or freeman, you know, that they had back then. That's perhaps the way we think of servant, as someone who's an employee. The word Jesus used was doulos. Now that specifically means bond servant. Someone who doesn't have ownership or rights of their own. It's exactly the same word that Paul used when he says, "I'm a bond servant to Christ." In Romans 1:1, he says, "Paul, a bond servant of Jesus Christ, called an apostle." It's interesting that Paul also writes in Galatians 4:7, "So you're no longer called a slave, but a son and an heir of God." He uses the same word, bondservant, then. So he calls himself a bondservant. But he also talks about moving beyond that as well. And the word Jesus uses for friends is philios, or philos. Dearly loved. A trusted confidant. Someone who has close personal affection. See, these two things are completely polar opposites to each other. Now, I want to be clear about something right at the start. If Jesus had turned to his disciples at this point and said, "I call you my servants," in no way would any of the disciples have been offended. It would not have been an insult to them. In fact, the disciples would have been over the moon. "My goodness, Jesus is calling me his servant. That's fantastic. The living God." To be a servant of Jesus was aspirational. What an honor that was. The problem we have today is that we don't view service as a positive thing. And that's really peculiar to our age and our generation. You know, right throughout history, service has been considered a good thing. Even now, customer service, my goodness, is something that you really struggle to get in some places. Especially in this country. It's amazing. Shopping here and shopping in America, the difference in customer service. People don't see service as a good thing nowadays. But to serve a king is a massive privilege. You know, right throughout history, some people have done some terrible and very peculiar jobs just to serve the king. And they've done these jobs gladly, because it was an honor. Henry VIII had servants in his room for everything. There was a job in Henry VIII's court that was called groom of the stool. And this job was given to a high-born noble, someone who was a lord. And this job was to wipe the king's bottom. That's the job. To wipe Henry VIII's bum. Can't imagine that being a fun job. Especially towards the end of his life, because that guy lost it. But you see, that job was considered a huge honor. Because in order for the king to allow you into that position, he had to trust you. A lot. Let's be honest. You had to be a trustworthy man to get that job. So to get that job, it meant you had the king's ear. It also meant you got to be very close to the king. Now you've got to wonder nowadays, why would anybody do that job? It's because it was a privilege. A privilege to serve the king. You know, you'd have somebody who was a lord and a knight who'd stand in Henry VIII's room with a jug ready to pour his drink. Now today, someone who's, you know, not highborn would struggle with the idea of doing that, yes? I don't think we fully appreciate today how positive service is. How much of a good thing service is. If Jesus had called his servants, his disciples servants, they would have been delighted. But he didn't say that. No, he said, I no longer call you servants. I now call you friends. The relationship changed. And why did this relationship change? Well, Jesus says, no longer do I call you servants, for the servant doesn't know what the master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. He made his plans known to them. The plans of the master became known. They had direction and they had vision from God because they knew what God was doing. You see, a servant was always just that, a servant. They work for you. You have standards that you expect them to do things and they expect from you. And that was the deal. You have expectations of service, rules, if you want to call them that. And they kept to them. That's what servants do. They do what is expected because that is their job. You may very well be nice to your servants. You might spend time with your servants. You might even choose to bless your servants, yes? But they're not your friends. There's a difference. A servant is a position of service. And again, we see when Paul referred to himself, he called himself a bondservant of Christ. Moses, Joshua, David, they were all called servants of God. In no way is the term servant a put down. But Jesus is calling us, each and every one of us, to be more than just servants. It's one of the final things he said to his disciples when he left the church in their hands. He didn't leave the church in the hands of servants. He left it in the hands of friends. See, servanthood is an honor, not a chore. But the world is transformed by friends of Jesus. See, a servant does what's expected. A servant does what he's told. Because if he doesn't, he's in trouble with his master. There's an expectation to a servant. A servant obeys what his master tells him to do. But for a friend, it's different. See, friends don't worry about disobedience. It's not to say they don't obey. But as a friend, you're not concerned about sticking to the rules and sticking to the obedience. What you're concerned about is your relationship with your friend. You're concerned about not damaging that relationship. See, as a friend, you act out of a different motivation because you don't want to let your friends down. Because they're your friend. You see, when you're a friend of Jesus, it becomes less about trying not to do the wrong things in life, trying to stick to the rules that the Bible says, and trying to stay in obedience and not sin, but it becomes more a question of, how does this affect my relationship with Jesus? It's completely different motivation. Yes, we obey. Yes, we stick to the rules, but not because we have to, but because we don't want to upset Jesus. It's not a case of, oh, will I get into trouble for this? Or is this inside the rules? Or how far can I go to the edge of the rules before I've gone too far? It's a case of, how does this affect my relationship with Jesus? It's a completely different motivation. And some Christians have been Christians a long time, but are still just servants. And are doing things because they think that they're doing things out of this motivation of not wanting to break the rules. It's no longer a case now of what does God require from me, but instead you ask, God, what can I do for you? That's the difference between a servant and a friend. You see, the disciples were so committed to Jesus as a friend that they laid down their lives for him. Not out of obligation, but that's because what friends do. Jesus told them as much. Verse 13, greater love has no more than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. Some of us don't even lay down an hour for our friend. A servant would not lay down their life because they don't act out of love. They act out of duty. And some of us, our relationship with God is a relationship of duty. The master of a house or a king would not tell his servants his goals and his desires. He tells those to his friends. You tell the servant what you want them to do in order to achieve your goals, but you don't tell them your aims. Servants serve because that's how they earn their keep. It's interesting. The more of a friend you become of Jesus, the more he tells you. The more revelation you get, the more words of knowledge you get, the more you understand his plans. But we as Jesus' friends are not simply obeying what he says to do. No, no. Instead, we share his heart and his purpose. We are on board with what Jesus wants to do in the world because we're his friends. And he has shared that with us, and it becomes our desire too. See, we're not working to earn anything from God. You cannot earn anything from God. Because guess what? If you've given him your life, you're already saved. It's done. You're not earning anything from God. When we're saved, we work for God. We serve in our church because it's our desire to see God's plans for this earth and redemption for this earth move forward. That's why we do it. We don't do it for brownie points. We serve in our local church because we know our local church is his plan for our local area to save this world from hell. Philippians 1, verses 3 to 6, it says, I thank my God in all my remembrance of you, always offering prayer with joy in every prayer for all of you, in view of your participation or partnership in the gospel from this first day until now. This word participation, the Greek word is, and I'm going to pronounce it wrong, but whatever, koinonia. That one. That word is often translated as fellowship. But that's not the full meaning of the word. It means a sharer. It means a partner. You see, fellowship is a cup of fantastic coffee before church or after church. Partnership means we're in this together. It implies a spirit of generous sharing rather than selfish getting. And that's how the church should work. Paul said he thanks God for the Philippians because of their partnership. That's why we moved away in this church from calling people involved in this church members. We moved it to partners because partners are together on a mission. Friends go that extra mile because where a servant does what they have to, a friend moves deeper. It is time for some of us. We've been servants too long. It's time to move deeper. It's time to take on the heart of a friend instead of just the heart of a servant. You see, the disciples laid down their lives for their friend. Not just in the way they died, but in the way they lived their lives. They gave everything. Let me ask you to ask yourself, how much have you laid down for God? How much have you really given? How do we know if we're a friend of God? How do we know if we're a friend of Jesus? Well, he tells us, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends. You are my friends if you do what I commanded you. Jesus is very clear what it means to be his friend. You are my friends if you do what I commanded you. Now, first of all, that means we're his friends if we love one another, because that's just what he's told them to do. That's what it follows immediately on from. You know, we're not just a loose group of people who meet in this building once a week. We're not. We're a family. We're together. We're on a mission and a purpose together. But also, we follow what Jesus commanded. And Jesus commanded, go into all the world and preach the gospel. How do you know if you're a friend of Jesus? You're doing what he commanded. Be a partner in the mission. This is what it means to be a friend. You see, the big difference between having the heart of a servant and the heart of a friend is simple but massive. It is simply motivation. Why is it we serve God in our local church by turning up early and welcoming somebody? Or by greeting somebody at the door, or helping them take communion, or helping to run a life group during the week, or giving our money? Why is it we do those things? Because we have to? Because we want something from God? Because we're chasing a blessing? No. Because we can call ourselves friends of Jesus. And that is what friends do. You know, to localize it, we all have a goal to see Teesside transformed for Jesus in this church. That's what this church is here for. To transform our area for Jesus. And if you're here this morning and you're not on board with that goal, then you're not sharing Jesus' goals. You're not a friend. You see, friendship might actually sound easier than servanthood, but it's actually a much higher calling. You know, when I moved house in 2003, it's a long time ago anyway, my friends from the church came to my house, filled their cars up with stuff, and transported it. When Rick Trotter, who now goes to the Middlesbrough Church, was laying a carpet in his house, Ian and I went over, despite the fact that we don't know how to lay a carpet, to help him. When I was taking my laminate floor up, Ian came round to help, and together we botched that job properly. Oh, that was terrible. Why did we do that? Because we have to? No. Were we helping because we were offered a reward? Did they help me move house because I pressured them into doing it? No. I didn't offer anything. I'm tight. It was an act of friendship. That's what it was. It was an act of friendship. See, here's the thing. Moving to the level of a friend doesn't mean less is required of you. Rather, it means you give more. Not because it's required, but because that's the nature of a friend relationship. To be a friend of God doesn't mean less work. Actually, it means a lot more. But since the motivation is different, it becomes a pleasure. 1 Corinthians 9:16, Paul said, "For if I preach the gospel, that gives me no ground for boasting. For necessity is laid upon me. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel." You know, this came up in our leadership vision day the other week. Paul said, "Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel." Why? Why woe? Is it because he felt condemned? That he wasn't, you know, that God would be angry with him if he didn't preach the gospel? No. It's because Paul understood how important the gospel was to God. He had that bigger perspective. Necessity was laid upon him. Why? Because he understood. The Father had revealed his plan and how important it was. So Paul felt, woe to me if I don't do that. Because he knows how important it is. Let me ask you this morning, and this is a challenge for all of us. When was the last time you felt, woe is me if I do not preach the gospel? When is the last time you felt that burden laid upon you of, oh my goodness, God, woe is me if I don't preach the gospel? It's a challenging question. Let's just do a quick round of hands. Not on that question. Who here would consider themselves saved? Quick show of hands. Just trying to spot the ones that aren't. No, sorry. Okay. Out of you who put your hands up, who was saved in church? Okay, not everybody, but a lot. How many of you came to that church because somebody invited you? Exactly the same amount. Listen, you know, there's all kinds of ways to do evangelism, and I'm not saying there's not. There's all kinds of ways to focus and see people saved. But don't misunderestimate the power of an invite to church. I was saved because somebody invited me to church. Great evangelism doesn't come out of service mentality. It comes out of a desire to see people saved. Service that comes out of relationship is worship. See, all of our service that we do, whether it's communion, greeting somebody at the door, being on the projector at the back, it's all an act of worship. You know, I used to get into this thing in my head where when I was doing sound, I used to get frustrated that I couldn't get involved in the worship. But what I was doing was worship. I just couldn't get involved in the singing. You understand? It's worship. See, worship is far more than singing songs. All of our service is an act of worship. And we have such a limited view of what worship is sometimes. If singing songs on a Sunday or in your car is as broad as your picture is of worship, then you're not looking broad enough. Service and lifestyle are just as much an act of worship than singing the songs. In fact, more so because you spend more time doing it. That's not to take away from singing songs. But you spend more time doing everything else in life. You know, there's people here this morning who have served well. There's some real great servant hearts in this room this morning. And there's some people here who do a huge amount. But it's always been just that. Service. Doing what we consider is required. And sometimes that feels a bit like a chore. I tell you, this morning God wants to set you free from that. He doesn't want it to be a burden. See, a friend doesn't argue over percentage of money that they give or how that money's used. A friend does what they can. They get involved rather than do their duty. A servant asks, how much do I have to tithe? How much can I get away with giving? A friend asks, what's needed? How much can I give? What can I do to help? Now I'm going to talk about tithing for a moment. And beware, I'm going to be blunt. I understand there's some very faithful givers in the church. There are many people here who give even though they've got little. This is not having a go at you, honestly. This is not. You know, you hear so many talks on tithes. Some churches do it every meeting before the offering's taken. Can you imagine? Yeah, every now and again we mention it, and you hear a little bit of feedback that we're talking about money too much in church. Believe me, in this church, we don't talk about it at all that much in comparison to some. So let's just get that out of the way first. The trouble is when you do your offering talks, it's very easy to ask people to help with a servant's mindset. We say give. God tells you in the Bible to test him on this. Yeah? He says, give and I will open the storehouses of heaven. Tithe and you will be blessed. Now keep with me. That's true. But that is the wrong motivation to tithe. Because serving in that way asks the question is, what can I get out of this? That's not how friends behave. If you've got friends like that, they're not very good friends, by the way. If everything that they do for you, they're trying to get something back. It's how servants act. Or we say, tithe. The Bible tells you to. It's required if you're a Christian. Again, it's true. But again, is reaching out to a servanthood mentality. When you give to Jesus as a friend, it's full of joy, not obligation. Can I be frank? Friends give because that's what friends do. Arguing over whether the tithe is New Testament or not absolutely, completely and utterly misses the point. You can say the tithe is no longer required, and you might have an argument. You might say it's more about the law than grace. You might make a strong argument. But let me tell you, your entire argument is an Old Testament argument as well. It's rooted in a servant mentality instead of a friend mentality. Frankly, it's not an argument. It's actually just a rather terrible excuse. I told you I'd be blunt. A New Testament view on giving is not how much is required. How much am I supposed to give? No, it's what is needed. How can I further the cause of God through my local church? It's funny. Most people who make the argument on whether the tithe binds us or not, and that the tithe is Old Testament, tend not to give. Which in itself isn't a very New Testament way to behave. If you're a Christian and you contribute nothing, then I've got to be honest. I've got to wonder what on earth is going on. I literally cannot wrap my head around it. How on earth do you biblically justify that? Seriously, how? Because I really don't think you can. You might be able to find a biblical argument about the percentage. Might. But you won't find a biblical argument against giving. See, Old Testament thinking is, they talk about money too much at church. Friends think, wow, there's a need. How can I help? Now I know we struggle financially. I know things are tight. I'm not saying that you should give a certain amount. I'm saying a friend asks, what can I do? A friend asks, what needs doing? And this isn't just about money. It's about serving as well and getting involved. You know, greater love has no one than this, that someone lays down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. A servant does what he's supposed to do. A friend lays down his life, his time, and his money, and his talents, and his dreams. The challenge I want to leave you with this morning is this. Are you a friend of Jesus? Or are you a servant? See, clearly the local church is the outworking of the body of Christ. This works out through your serving in church. When you become a member or a partner, you align yourself with the goals of the church. Are you this morning a good friend to Jesus? You know, Jesus rounds this whole thing off by saying, you did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you should go bear and bear fruit, that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. These things I commanded you, so that you will love one another. He chose us. He chose us. Why? He chose us so we can bear fruit. That's what he says. I chose you so you can bear fruit. And then he follows it up with, so whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. Now we've all heard, whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you, plenty of times. But that's not the whole sentence. There's not a full stop there. There's a colon in that one. I haven't got a colon. But anyway, It's not a full sentence. What he says is, it's linked to bearing fruit. How can being fruitful and asking for things be linked? Because when you're his friend, you bear fruit. You do his will. You serve. And the things you ask for, when you're his friend, aren't selfish. The things you ask for are to further the kingdom. It's amazing how much more prayers get answered when they're not selfish prayers. It's amazing how many more prayers you'll find get answered when you know you're praying about something God already wants. Anyway, there's four types of people here this morning. First of all, there's those who don't know Jesus at all. Got no relationship with him. Now, Jesus laid down his life so that you could become his friend. Greater love has no more than this, that someone lays down his life for his friends. And even though we spend our lives living as an enemy to God, going against his will, doing our own thing, something that the Bible calls sin, Jesus came to put it right. And I just want to challenge you this morning, will you be saved? Will you die and taste life? Or will you die and taste death? Heaven or hell? Blessing or judgment? See, Jesus says it ultimately comes down to whether you accept him as the Lord of your life, as the boss. You make Jesus the boss, he's the Lord of your life. The atheists are wrong. There is a God. There is a world beyond this world. And there is a life after this life. And it is entirely up to you where you choose to spend it. As a friend of God or as an enemy. There's no secret hidden third choice. One day, you're going to meet him. One day you'll stand before him. On what terms that meeting happens is entirely up to the choices you make in this life. You can know him today. It's that simple. You can make a choice to make him your Lord and Savior this morning. He can take those broken parts of your life and he can put them all together again. Now, I'm not going to do an appeal, but I will ask if anyone does want to make that choice, just come find me after the meeting and we'll have a prayer, okay? Second group of people here are people who are saved but do not have the heart of a servant at all. There are some people here who know Jesus but frankly just don't get involved. The challenge I want to put to you this morning is, what does that mean for your relationship with Christ? See, before the disciples were brought to the level of friend, they were at least at the level of servant. I don't think it's one you can skip. Maybe you feel like your walk with God has become a little bit stale. Then you've got to be active. That's the only way to freshen it up. You know, we can spend a lot of time making excuses, and of course we can't get involved in everything, and there's some jobs quite clearly we can't do. But we can all be involved in something. The trouble is with doing a series like this is there's people who will hear the need, hear the principles, and still won't decide to do anything about it. Or will still find themselves an excuse not to give their money, their time, their talents, or themselves. And some of you have heard this sort of thing time and time again, and it's made absolutely no difference to you whatsoever. The challenge I want to leave with you is, if you're saved, how can you not see the need? Now, I'm not question your salvation, please don't get me wrong. But how can you not want to play a part? For some of you, it is time to shake off complacency because it's keeping you from growing and developing in God. Some of us judge how good a Sunday meeting is by what we get from it, by how we go away feeling. That's not what church is about. Church is not about what you get. Church is about what you give. What you put in. What you give to God is worship. What you learn is to serve him better. If church to you is just about what you get out of the meeting, then let me tell you right now, you've got the entire thing backwards. You know, the word repentance means to change your mind, to turn around your mind. And that applies. If this entire church meeting thing is about what you get, you have to repent. You need to turn your mind around. You are not in a club. You're on a mission. This is not a cruise liner. It's a battleship. We do not serve to earn our salvation. Because we're already saved, we serve. We are not saved by good works. We are saved for good works. Now that might be hard for you. Might be hard for you to accept. You give no time, no finance, none of your talents. And let me tell you, once you're living like that, it is hard to break it. I get that. It's tough. But if you make a decision this morning before God that you want to go deeper with Him, I believe God will honor that and He will guide you into it. Third set of people who are here this morning are those who have the heart of a servant. But you don't really have the heart of a friend. There's some people here who have great servant hearts. People who do so much, give faithfully, get involved with the teams, and can always be counted on to be there. But some of you are doing it out of obligation. You're doing it because it's what you think you should be doing. And sometimes it becomes a chore and a complete pain. But you do it anyway because you think you should. Maybe there's something you've been involved with for a while and there's just not as much joy in doing it as there used to be. The challenge to you this morning is, there's a better way. There's a higher level. There is a joy to be found in friendship. When you do it as a friend, not because you should, but that's because what friends do. And I just want to encourage you to step out into that. Take off the obligation and do it because Jesus is your friend. And there's those of us this morning, last category, who do have the heart of a friend. You know, friendship is born out of relationship. And one of the great things about a friendship with Jesus is that Jesus is so big, so vast, so perfect, there's always more. There's always a deeper level to go to. You know, Rabbi Zacharias, the Christian apologist, he describes Jesus as the perpetual novelty. There's always something fresh. There's always something exciting about him. And I encourage you this morning. I thank God that you have the heart of a friend. And I just want to encourage you to always be looking for ways to deepen that friendship. Because it can become stale. Refresh the friendship. Find new challenges. There's always a new adventure to be had with Jesus. There's always something new to get involved with. There's always new ways to help. You know, there's a danger when we're talking about this, that we can make it seem that we're saved through service. It's not the case. Not at all. That's a work-based faith. And that's not what Christianity is. The challenge I just want to leave you with is, are you a good friend to Jesus? And Jesus quite clearly explains what that means. Are you a good friend to your local body of Jesus, the church? See, I don't have a problem saying no matter who we are and where we are, we can all do better. We can all go deeper. We can all discover something new and fresh and exciting in our service. We have service forms out the back or the front. Fill them in, but also don't just limit yourself to what's on them. There's plenty of ways to get involved. Maybe God's put some burning passion in your heart. Brilliant. Tell us, and we'll encourage it. Let's just pray.